Hi, good morning. This is our Neighborhood Community Affairs Committee of September 25th. Yes, you sit over here. Joining us are Commissioners Gongora, who sits over here. I saw Commissioner Samuelin over here, and we'll wait for other members to arrive shortly. Since we have quorum, we are beginning. Quick announcement, item number 15, the naming of the North Shore Bandshell, has been deferred by staff. Any other announcements?
Number 13.
Number 13 as well. Number 13, not 15. Number 13 has been deferred. Thank you. Any other announcements? Nope. We're going to take things out of order today. We're going to actually start with number 15, which is actually discussion of an item regarding an ordinance amending the Sidewalk Cafe Code of Conduct and expanding it to Española and Way and Lincoln Road. And Rob, will you set us up?
This is a fact-finding hearing to consider whether objective evidence supports the enactment of the proposed Sidewalk Cafe Code of Conduct, including a restriction that sidewalk cafes not solicit pedestrians on Lincoln Road and Española Way. The city manager has entered an extensive written record with evidence into the agenda for today, and he expressly incorporates that record into the legislative record for this item. The written record includes about 20 declarations from the various Lincoln Road and Española stakeholders, including personal experiences of people who have been negatively impacted in their business and in their experience on those streets by solicitors. We have a plethora of online reviews for Lincoln Road and Española sidewalk cafes specifically relevant to soliciting of pedestrians and the various scams and bad service that follow at establishments that solicit in this manner. We also have a number of written online responses to an online poll conducted via social media by the city indicating that pedestrians on Lincoln Road and Española Way feel annoyed, harassed, coerced, and scammed by solicitors for sidewalk cafes on Lincoln Road and Española Way. Today you're going to hear live testimony of Lincoln Road and Española Way stakeholders. Commissioners, you should feel free to ask them questions or to ask me questions at any time and to give your own personal experiences and observations regarding solicitations on Lincoln Road and Española Way as you see fit. After the witnesses have testified, each commissioner will have the opportunity to speak and ask questions as well. I want to point out to the commissioners and to everyone who's testifying today that we have a court reporter here in the room with us, and she's taking down everything that you say for the evidentiary record that goes into the legislative record for today. She'll be swearing in all of our witnesses, and then she'll be taking down what you say. So please, when you get up here, state your name and spell your name for her, and then speak slowly and clearly so she can get everything down that you say. Could everybody who's going to testify today please stand up, and the court reporter will swear you in. We're going to start with the residents and business stakeholders first, and we'll do the staff members last so that we can get the people who have to go about their day out of here first. First, we have Mickey Marrero from the Española Way group, and he's going to testify first. Mickey.
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Mickey Marrero from the law firm Burke, Coverdale, Fernandez, and Larkin, here on behalf of the Clay Hotel Partnership, the owners of the southern half of Española Way, the Clay Hotel. My client, unfortunately, could not be here today, but they asked me to be here because they see this as a significant problem affecting their business and the enjoyment of the client and customer experience on Española Way. The concern that they have, since they've been the owners of this building for the last 3 years, they're undergoing a significant renovation, a significant investment in Española Way. As you know, the street has been reopened in a fully pedestrian capacity, and what they find is that although many of their tenants would like to comply, and many of them did submit affidavits to that effect for this proceeding, when one tenant is hawking and trying to get in front of everyone else, it almost forces everyone to to have the same behavior because they feel that in order to compete with the one guy that's not following the rules, everyone has to break the rules. So what they would like to see, and I think the collective, their tenants would like to see, to provide a better experience so that folks dining at the restaurants are not constantly being bothered by other folks. Folks that are walking, enjoying the street, or staying at the hotel aren't constantly being pulled into restaurants without their consent. They would like the regulation to be applied to Espanola Way and the sidewalk cafes so that there is enforcement and a unified set of regulations that everyone can apply to. Thank you. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer them as well.
Thank you.
Next, we have Michael DeFilippi.
Morning, guys. Michael DeFilippi. I need to spell it. Yeah? Okay. Oh, sorry. MICHAEL, capital D, E, capital F, ILIPPI. Good. 260 Euclid Avenue, apartment 28. So anyways, I was brought in by the Espanola Way Association back in April to help them with exactly this issue and some other issues as well. So proactively, they actually wanted to address this, like I said, back in April, before the code of conduct was even discussed. And it's been a challenge because without teeth to really control this, it's very difficult to stop it. And the experience on the street is very negative. People feel harassed. I see them walking up and down the street, and they're haggled by four or five different operators in a row. And I'm like, guys, stop. You're just hurting each other. If someone's out in the street and they experience this, they're very they're unlikely to come back. And I read the reviews, and the reviews talk about aggressive hosts, people following them, people yelling at them, hawking, whatever you want to call it. So it's definitely hurt our brand. And I think if you are able to tackle this in the long term, it's going to help all these locations because people don't really think that when someone's here, they just think, oh, I need to grab them right now. But realistically, they might be here for a week. They might be here for a couple of weeks. And if they have a great experience in the street, they might come back. But if they come to the street and they feel annoyed and harassed, they're not going to come back. So I applaud you for considering this, and I hope you'll include Espanola Way in this code of conduct. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is Rory Greenberg.
Rory Greenberg, 5 Island Avenue. I'm here in a couple of capacities. I've represented the owner of the north half of Espanola Way for about 5 years, also a resident. I'm also on the steering committee for the Washington Avenue bid. And it's true what everyone's saying. I mean, I have been on the street for 5 years. All the operators know me. They know I represent the owner. They know I'm not just randomly there. And they harass me when I walk down the street. It's very annoying, and I almost don't want to go back, and it's my job to go back. So it's obvious that because Washington is where the traffic comes from, the first few restaurants seem to fill up faster, and then the restaurants behind them start to kind of meander east to try to get that business, and it becomes, you know, a game of people competing with one another. And like Michael's saying, the reviews are negative. Our hotel guests are not very happy when they walk out to enjoy their day, and there's five people in their face, eat here, we have a deal, 10% off. It's just not... It's not what sidewalk cafe permits are for. It's supposed to be a beautiful, relaxing, enjoying the day, and it really hurts. I think Eric and I have spoke a bit in the past about Drexel Avenue. The east side of Drexel Avenue sidewalk from Lincoln to Espanola, I mean, the bid talks about it all the time. If we could create that walking path and we can create a better experience, people turning off Lincoln to the timeout market, continuing south, walking on Espanola, getting to Washington, I think it would make for a more walkable city and a more enjoying overall experience for everybody. So I'd love to see us kind of focus on pedestrians versus cars in general, but in this one particular moment, I think it would help the hawking on the street. But it's very important, like Michael said, to have a proper set of regulations that are enforceable so we can actually control this and give people some outdoor dining, which I think everybody wants. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next we have Tiege Clerks.
Good morning. I'll spell that for you. Tice Clerks, T-I-J-S-K-L-E-R-X. I'm the general manager for Infinity Real Estate that is on the owner of the south side of Espanola Way, representing David Burke and Steve Kasten, the partners of Infinity. And I wanted to share an anecdote with you because you've heard a couple of examples here already. But last week, Saturday, I was on the street myself with a reporter from one of the online magazines here in Miami, who obviously wants to portray in a very positive image of Española Way as a destination not only for tourists visiting Miami Beach, but also for locals. And we started on Washington Avenue, made our way towards Drexel, and at every single establishment, we must have been approached by three different individuals with either a menu, a discount card, or try to sort of be ushered to a table. And I actually had to sort of defend in front of the reporter our efforts to curtail this. So it's working really against us. To one side, really focus on the positive, and we do great work in partnership with Scott Robbins on the north side of the street, with Michael as a street manager. We even have hired an PR agency to help us elevate the experience of the street overall. But then to bring in a reporter and have that kind of experience, that really just breaks everything down that we're trying to build up. Also for myself, we're putting the hotel together, the Clay Hotel, to relaunch next year, where the entrance will be on Washington. But oftentimes we'll have to escort guests down Española Way to get to their rooms that are further down the corridor. And I'm highly concerned of that guest experience. So I hope that we can address that, and I will certainly be an active partner in addressing that. Thank you very much.
And then finally for Española Way, I think, is Josh Robbins.
Hello, I'm Josh Robbins. I live on 9 Island Ave, and I've been a resident of Miami Beach for 26 years. And for 26 years, I've been going to Española Way, enjoying the streets, going to the restaurants. And hawking's always been an issue there, but since the past few years, it's gotten exponentially worse and worse each time. The employees are getting more aggressive. They're inching more and more into the walkways. Recently, I was sitting at a restaurant, and I was being coerced by another restaurant to come eat at their restaurant. And it's just it's not a good feeling. Like, I used to bring people there with me, like, to experience the street. Now I don't really feel comfortable doing that. And Española Way, I think our goal long-term is to make it more of a local destination. But if there's this much harassment and abuse of the pedestrians walking through it, I don't know if that could really be a viable possibility. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now for Lincoln Road, we have Timothy Schmand.
Good morning, Commissioners. Tim Schmand, Lincoln Road Business Improvement District. Timothy, T-I-M-O-T-H-Y, Schmand, S-C-H-M-A-N-D. So I'm the Executive Director of the Lincoln Road Bid, and if there were three complaints that I get, you know, the top three complaints, number two or three is the hawking on Lincoln Road. People have told me that they go down the alleys to avoid walking up Lincoln Road because sometimes they feel like they're running a gauntlet. And I don't know that it necessarily benefits the business operators to have people out there trying to convince people to sit down and eat. If people are hungry and your restaurant looks attractive, people will sit down and eat. And I don't think that your marketing is fortified by having people talking to people as they walk by you. And I'll answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And do we have Michael Lorente here? No. And is there any other member of the public who would like to speak on this matter before we start with, come on up, before we start with staff?
Good morning. I was not planning to speak, but it's really fast. You know me. I'm from VE. I'm one of the biggest VE restaurant group.
Okay. Say your name, please.
Jamil Deeb. I'm sorry. We own restaurants on Lincoln Road, Ocean Drive, and Española Way. 15 years ago, we never had a discount. We never had a 2-for-1. We never had nothing. We don't like that. Ocean Drive starts with all these like pop-up restaurants. Restaurants that they don't, restaurant owners that they don't operate restaurants. And they start with 2-for-1, 3-for-1, big margaritas, huge margaritas, three hostess, five hostess. And us, If you see our reviews, we're 4.3, 4.5, and they're killing us. So either if we do that or we close. I don't know how they pay, if they pay cash, certain things. I don't know how can they sell tacos in $1 and give free margaritas to everyone. They're killing us. We stopped growing on the beach. And another factor is that convention center closed, business every year it's slower. So that makes it what's happening. But in order to solve one idea, let's remove hostesses from the sidewalks. Let's put them inside. No more boards. Let the people choose where they want to eat. Let them see the reviews and see if it's real or not. But thank you. Thank you very much.
Could you spell your name for the court reporter? I don't think she got it.
J-A-M-I-L, last name Dib, D-I-B, V-E Restaurant Group.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. John, J-O-H-N, Dutzman, D-E-U-T-Z-M-A-N. I'm on the mayor's panel for Ocean Drive and also spent 30 years in television news, 15 as an investigative reporter. Did a lot of false advertising stories. The city keeps missing, maybe for 20 years. This is illegal, false advertising, bait-and-switch fraud, period. I know it's annoying, but that's the underlying concept, and that's their business model. And until some people get walked away in handcuffs for fraud, they're going to keep trying and trying and trying. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other members of the public? Okay. We have a number of staff people who are going to give you testimony from the staff perspective. First is Kamal Deshong.
Good morning, everyone. Kamal Deshong, K-A-M-A-L-D-E-S-H-O-N-G, with property management. Before I was with the city, I was with Block by Block, the operations manager over the ambassador program on Lincoln Road. So I worked for Mr. Timothy Schmand. So I can more talk from the experience on the observation piece. It is very impactful to the visitors to the road. You already have a great resource like the ambassador program that help tourists find what they're looking for, Italian food, tacos. So the fact that a lot of these guys are trying to force their way into people's walking path makes it very impactful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Justin Carr.
Good morning. Justin Carr, K-A-R-R. I've been a resident for 12 years, and most of my friends and I really avoid a lot of these commercial corridors that have the cafes. It's a constant game of whack-a-mole of attractive-looking hawkers. And it's unfortunate because I think this is affecting our brand. Very recently, a restaurant closed on Lincoln Road. I can't remember which one, but Commissioner, you and I have lamented about, you know, some of our favorite restaurants closing. And I was reading public comment on your social media, and someone was saying, why does the city not do more and help economic development with these restaurants? I think just like the rising tide helps all boats, the inverse is true, and a couple of bad apples are affecting the hospitality industry. So it's unfortunate that we have to police bad conduct, but I think that would be incumbent upon maybe a bid or a business association. However, it's affecting our brand and our livelihood. We need to take corrective action. Thank you.
Adrian Morales, are you here?
Good morning, Adrian Morales, M-O-R-A-L-E-S. So I've been managing the city, I've been managing Lincoln Road with the city for almost 5 years. And every tenant, operator meeting, this issue kind of comes up. We've worked extensively with the bid to create more program, cultural performances and creative programming. And the one item that sticks out is the behavior of the hostesses and the hosts trying to lure people into the cafe. So obviously, this is an important item, and to Justin's point, it's hurting the brand for Miami Beach. And people, you know, mentioned that they avoid Lincoln Road, they avoid Ocean Drive, and they avoid these kinds of areas for this same reason. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anthony Perez.
Good morning, Commissioners. Anthony Perez, P-E-R-E-Z. I am the co-compliance officer for those areas. I'm pretty much repeating the testimony of what everyone else is saying in terms of, you know, when I go on my patrols, I see, you know, these hostesses. They have one hostess in the front and then one in the sidewalk cafes, you know, just sort of blocking the way, you know, of the passerbys and the patrons, trying to lure them into the sidewalk cafes. In my personal opinion, if someone is interested in your restaurant, they'll stop by and look at your menu. They'll, you know, go upon those things. They don't need the sort of nuisance of someone going by and, hey, come join us and whatever it might be. I've seen actual, you know, hostesses walk with the patients as they're, you know, they're within a sidewalk cafe, but they're still walking next to them saying, come with me, come with us. You know, it makes the restaurants look sort of desperate in a sort of way. And if I were a patient, I wouldn't necessarily, that wouldn't be attractive to me. It would sort of steer me away. But besides that, I mean, I feel like, you know, this is an issue that needs to be, you know, sort of handled, because it's sort of, it makes, you know, Lincoln Road also, and Espanola Way, I'm in both areas, it makes them look sort of, it's like what Kamal was saying, it's sort of the brand of Miami Beach is sort of deteriorating because of those issues. Thank you.
And then we finally have, do we have someone else from code here? Sorry.
Good morning. Manny Villar, V-I-L-L-A-R, I'm the co-compliance manager. I want to start off by basically describing how much worse this issue has gotten ever since the ban on solicitation. It's become more widespread. The solicitation has become more aggressive. You know, oftentimes if you don't interact with the person that's hawking, they become rude and disrespectful because they get angry and agitated. I've experienced this from both sides. Sometimes I walk Lincoln Road in plain clothes, so they don't know who I am. So I'm observing, and I see this all the time frequently. And it's definitely been a serious increase since the city was stopped from enforcing this activity. We used to have to expend quite a bit of resources at enforcing this type of activity because of the fact that when they see the code officer in uniform approaching or walking down the block, there's two things. A lot of these businesses have a network per se, so when they see the code officer, they'll start letting each other know by text or by phone that there's a code officer on Lincoln Road. He's, you know, on the 300 or 400 block walking westward. And then the second part of it is, obviously, when they identify the code officer, they cease the activity, the aggressive hawking activity. It's very difficult to enforce this, and we used to have to put details together with code officers in plain clothes so they couldn't be identified, and obviously it took quite a bit of maneuvering. We'd have to send people that normally didn't work Lincoln Road so they wouldn't be recognized, etc. So it was very challenging, but when we did that, it was effective. And I also want to, somebody else brought up the point, another major point is that these operators or these people conducting this, engaging in this behavior, it becomes kind of like a competition. They feel the need that they have to hawk more aggressively than their competitor because they feel that this is being effective and they're bringing customers in. So then it becomes a competition where it keeps escalating, and, you know, where does it end? And it's not a very, I don't think it's the brand that Miami Beach wants, and I've noticed the expression of a lot of our visitors and tourists that they're turned off by this type of activity. So that's what I've encountered for this topic.
Thanks, Manny.
Thank you, sir.
Is there anybody else at all who wants to talk on this subject? yeah, if you weren't here before.
I do. Thank you, Commissioners. Mike Llorente Heckler, 801 41st Street. And I'd like to speak not just as representative of the Lincoln Road bid, who you all know we represent, but as a taxpayer in this city and someone who spends a significant amount of time here in the summer with my family. and a lot of that time is on Lincoln Road and Española Way. You know, we talk about soliciting and hawking, but to me those are euphemisms. I mean, this is harassment, and it's harassment in the public right-of-way. To me, Lincoln Road in particular is one of the great public spaces that this city has. It's one of the great public spaces in all of South Florida. And a member of the public should be able to use that space and enjoy that space without being harassed. And it's very difficult to do that when I'm walking down. And I've experienced this candidly in both Lincoln Road and Española Way almost on a weekly basis when I visit with my family. You can't enjoy a leisurely walk. You can't have a conversation with someone as you're walking down either one of those strips because you are constantly being harassed and interrupted. So, you know, unfortunately, what you end up doing is just developing sort of tunnel vision and trying to figure out the fastest way to get through the gauntlet, as Mr. Schmand called it. And so, you know, this truly is a critical issue. I think it's critical to allow not just the businesses to thrive, but the public to enjoy these incredible public spaces. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, that closes the testimony portion of your hearing. There are two items or considerations that you need to make when making your judgment whether this ordinance is supported by evidence. And the first is that, is there a legitimate governmental interest in this? Is it supported by evidence? Is there objective evidence to say that we need this? And the second thing that you need to consider before passing this on is whether lesser restrictions would work to meet that goal. And I just want to give you some more information. This is similar to what we gave you in the Ocean Drive portion of this ordinance, but we performed we considered alternative ideas of issuing limited permits or holding lotteries for a limited ability for some sidewalk cafes to solicit pedestrians as a way to deal with the problem. And we're recommending that you not enact that scheme for the following reasons, that permits and lotteries won't work here. First, we performed a survey, and this was on Ocean Drive, but we have no reason to believe Española and Lincoln would be different. And the results confirm that a permit or lottery system would not work because everyone would want one. We have been told that each sidewalk cafe must have solicitors, if any of them do it, in order to remain competitive. Each tries to get a competitive advantage by having more than the restaurant next door, with some sidewalk cafes having 4 to 5 solicitors lined up on the sidewalk to gain a competitive advantage. Many have stated that they would not have to solicit if no one did it, but if everyone does, they all have to. Second, the city uses permits and lotteries for fully protected First Amendment activities, such as artists and street performers, but the law does not demand the same system for less protected commercial speech, like sidewalk cafe solicitors. Third, we use a permit and lottery system for kinds of speech activities that enhance visitors' experience, like artists and street performers. We want to encourage these types of activities that enhance the visitors' experience, but we need to limit the numbers and spacing of each of them due to constraints of space and geography. Commercial soliciting of pedestrians by sidewalk cafes does not enhance any visitor's experience. Our experience is that commercial solicitors detract from the experience and lead many people to state that they will never return. Therefore, a permit or lottery system for commercial solicitors would actually detract from our governmental interest and would be inappropriate. At this time, I open the fact-finding hearing for your questions, your observations, and any information that you'd like to get from me.
Thank you for that wonderful presentation. One thing that's clear is if you need to be hawked or harassed, you gotta be a man, because we heard from like 15 of them today. But thank you. I can tell you from my own personal experiences and from hearing from several of my friends, all of whom are women actually that live near Lincoln Road, it seems that as things have gotten better on Ocean Drive, perhaps they've gotten worse on Lincoln Road and Española. I know that I've personally noticed the hawking more than ever before, people stopping me, the menus in the face, and the kind of bad behavior that we're trying to get away from. And I also hear it from a number of my friends and constituents that think that the situation is getting worse. So I think this is something we have to do. We've something that we've done already on Ocean Drive and seen the improvements, so it's time to take it to these other important commercial streets with sidewalk cafes.
Thank you. Commissioners, Malakoff?
It's absolutely embarrassing for the whole city of Miami Beach when our visitors look to see where they should go to dinner, and they look up on Yelp or TripAdvisor or everybody uses social media these days, and they see such things as tourist trap. It's a ripoff, bait and switch. I mean, over and over and over again, and this is many different establishments, both on Ocean Drive, on Lincoln Road, on Espanola Way. And we're speaking specifically about bringing this to Espanola Way and Lincoln Road, and I think it's absolutely essential. When I go to Lincoln Road, which I do frequently, I'm one of the locals that actually go shopping on Lincoln Road, people come up to you, and they're trying to sell you something, or you walk by the restaurants, and some of them actually have like two-for-one big drinks like they had on Ocean Drive, now that it's moved to Lincoln Road. Lincoln Road should be a beautiful, beautiful street that residents love to go to, as well as all of our visitors. And it's degrading, and it's like competitive, because each of the hosts or hostesses standing out front are all trying to get your business. But instead of just saying good afternoon, how are you, or something pleasant, welcome to Miami Beach, anything like that, they've got the menus, we got two for one, come have lunch with us, come have dinner here. And it shouldn't be. It's not right for the city of Miami Beach, and it's certainly not right for Lincoln Road or Espanola Way. The hawking especially, I find very, very offensive.
Thank you. Commissioner Samuelin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe this hawking and behavior is very detrimental to Lincoln Road, Espanola Way, and our community. Our residents share it all the time, both on social media, and I've heard it personally. And in fact, the resident reaction to Ocean Drive and the good things we're doing there is a clear indicator that they want more of it. I have heard directly from businesses the detrimental impact that this has, and in fact, damage is done to good operators. And as someone who lives close to Lincoln Road as well as Espanola Way, I've personally experienced it. I've had to reroute myself. I've had to go in different directions because I didn't have to walk down, as someone described, as the gauntlet. I think it does irreparable harm to our city, our image, our brand. I think it's hurting us financially because it is, if you will, a race to the bottom, and we're losing precious tax money. We're losing visitors, which we need to provide the services that we do. I also think from the city standpoint that we need consistency. And we have done this on Ocean Drive, and I believe just equity would suggest that the same rules should be in place. When I was elected 2 years ago, one of my first exercises was to try and identify a few priorities that really would be helpful to the community. This one leapt off the page because this is bad behavior that is impacting our community, our good operators, and our city. I've reviewed the other options of permits and lotteries, and I find them totally unacceptable. I don't think they're practical in any way. I don't think we could implement that in a fair way, so I would firmly reject those other alternatives. I think we need to go with the prohibition as described.
Okay. Thank you. I echo my colleague's sentiments. I think we've all experienced this personally. We've heard about it, the aggressive solicitation, as someone put it, harassment that we all experience. We've all been in situations where you've had fraudulent tip added, bait and switches, hawking. So having a unified set of regulations, I think, is the appropriate measure that we need to be moving forward. And with that, do I hear a motion?
Yes, thank you. Based on the testimony presented as well as the written documentation provided in the supplemental, and all of the evidence presented by our city attorney, I move that we move forward with an ordinance amending the Sidewalk Cafe Code of Conduct as set forth in Section 82.389J to extend those prohibitions pertaining to the solicitation of pedestrians on the public right-of-way to Lincoln Road and Espanola Way.
I second that.
So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you, commissioners. And before I go, I would be remiss if I did not thank Ferocia and Ashiva, who is an attorney in our office, and she was responsible for building the legislative record that is before you today.
Rob, and I want to thank you for putting all the time and effort and hard work necessary to get this moving forward, and to all the stakeholders that came out to speak and all the residents who came out to speak, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you all. Wonderful presentation.
And now, since we are discussing sidewalk cafes, I feel it's only right that we go into item number 14, since you're here, Commissioner Samuelin, regarding the sidewalk cafe ordinance and the massing of all outdoor furniture at the close of business. Who's here to speak on this item?
Which item number?
Item number 14.
14's the lighting, I think, right?
The massing. No, massing.
The massing. 14 of the mass. Okay.
Sidewalk Cafe. I'm staying in theme here.
Okay.
Good morning, commissioners. This is an item brought to you out of a recommendation. Primarily, it started with a conversation that the Ocean Drive Panel, Safety and Security Infrastructure Subcommittee had, with concerns over loitering on sidewalk cafe furniture after establishments close. I know for Ocean Drive it's a big issue, and we've seen it out there, especially when it's high-impact weekends where people tend to just loiter on the furniture. And a lot of times operations are closed, and the officers don't realize that the operations are closed because there's lights on in the establishments and there's people on the furniture. So it creates an enforcement issue. And in conversations with the manager and with Adrian Morales representing Lincoln Road, we realize that this is something that impacts a lot of the sidewalk cafes in the city.
Good morning. And to echo Amy's point, so over the last few months, I've done several overnight details with police patrol just on enforcement of a variety of issues on Lincoln Road. And what we found is sidewalk cafes that close after 2 o'clock in the morning, folks leaving the clubs or bars and even some homeless have been just hanging around and laying down, plugging in fans and just sleeping on the furniture or just having a conversation to 3, 4, 5 in the morning. So the code doesn't allow for the stacking of any furniture. One of the things that we feel that can kind of correct this behavior for an area that's technically closed because none of the shops are open, none of the restaurants are open at that time, is if we are able to condense the footprint by stacking the furniture and just, instead of restaurants having 1,200 feet spread out through a certain area, they would condense it to a very minimal area, stack it and condense it. Some of the good operators that have good quality furniture, they bring that stuff in, but others don't. And I think this is an opportunity for that. In addition to that, whenever we have to do maintenance of the piano keys and stuff like that, it's a unique challenge for us where we have to coordinate several days before to get them to move their stuff. But we feel like starting in at 5 in the morning, we could have that area painted before they set it out for breakfast, and it'll be ready, and it'll look much nicer than what it currently looks right now due to that impact.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner, you were one of the sponsors.
Yeah, this also came up at the Ocean Drive Mayor's Panel on Safety and Security. I strongly support what staff has brought forward. I think we should make this a requirement, and I think we should update this ordinance and bring it to the full commission.
Yes, Commissioner.
I guess because I don't go to the Ocean Drive Task Force meetings, I was a little surprised by this item. So I do have a couple of questions. How many years have cafes been allowed to leave their furniture out?
Forever. It seems like it's been the existence of the code for that section of the code. There's always been the prohibition
been
of stacking.
For at least 5 years since I've been here,
Since before I was elected the first time in 2006. So I think it's always been, it's been forever. I've never heard about this being a problem because most of these cafes close and I don't have a strong feeling about this one, by the way. I'm just telling you what my thoughts are. These cafes close late, midnight, 2 a.m., and they reopen for breakfast. So I'd never heard of this being a problem. What's going on in the furniture in the middle of the night? Like, the last item I strongly support because it's happening during the day when residents are out. There was tons of testimony explaining to us what the problem is. Is there something going on in the middle of the night with the furniture?
So my colleagues in police are here. They can share. So we've done several overnight details. What you see is some of these restaurants have these couches and these lounge type seatings. What people do is they'll leave a bar and then they'll just sit there, plug in a fan, and they just have either conversation out there or are sleeping out there. It doesn't lend itself for a safe environment, right? So what's happened is. Some of the good operators already stack their stuff. If you go Pizza Rustica, they already have everything stacked up. Next Cafe, all the others already do that. Some of the others don't. So you have a very long and a very wide footprint where just tables are all sprawled out. So what's happening is just that. In those details, we've picked up several folks with warrants. We've picked up people just kind of hanging around after hours, so whether they're smoking or they're doing, whatever it is that they're doing. And if you're traversing through there or you're a jogger and you see somebody just kind of sitting there or a group of people just sitting there 4 in the morning, that's just not a safe environment. So we felt that this is an opportunity to kind of remove that element for better patrol, for police to be able to run through there and just do better patrol, and also for us to be able to do better maintenance. At the end of the day, it's a real challenge for us to remove all that stuff, to paint in the early hours so they can get set up for breakfast.
Okay. And can I ask one more question? I just want to make it clear. So this ordinance is to stack and secure. So they would just kind of line it up along the outside of their business in some kind of a way to protect it. We're not requiring them to store it inside or move it.
No, some of the cafes don't have the space to store it inside. And as we get into the new Lincoln Road project, which will define cafe spaces, it'll be a little bit easier because the sidewalk cafe areas will be marked by the pavement. Here, if you look at like Meat Market, Paw Bakery, et cetera, they already stack their stuff or they kind of accommodate it where it's outside and just shy of their actual storefront and not all over the Follies or all over the piano keys. So a lot of folks are already stacking them, but in the code it's not allowed. So we actually want to correct that to be able to allow for that.
And would this be citywide or is this for Ocean Drive only?
I'm here to discuss the issues that I have on Lincoln Road, and I know that Amy's had similar conversations with Commissioner Samuel and others from the Ocean Drive panel on a similar need. So it would be, and candidly, sanitation does pressure wash the right-of-way at times, and it's also a challenge for them citywide. So I would assume that this would make sense citywide.
And Washington Ave similarly has the same issue. I know in North Beach and 41st Street, a lot of them tend to bring in their cafe furniture because they have the smaller footprint, and there's a lot less. And they have the smaller sidewalk cafe footprint, and they have a larger indoor space. And there's a lot less traverse of their sidewalk, so I think maybe for security reasons they feel the need to want to bring it in. But I know it predominantly tends to be focused on the southern end of the city with cafe furniture being left out and issues with vagrancy. I can tell you firsthand, I've seen it where it's hard to identify if someone's there to be problematic or if someone's there to actually be a part of the establishment. And it takes a lot of attention to notice that they're not supposed to be there when the establishment's closed.
Okay. It makes sense to me to stack the furniture and secure it. I don't know though what some of the establishments are going to do about the sofas and easy chairs they have outside. Unless there's room to put them inside.
Yeah, typically
inside,
what they'll do is...
I think that's one of the major problems. The straight chairs, nobody wants to lounge in.
Typically what they'll do, like Segafredo, which is a tenant of the city, the Colony Theater, what they'll do is they'll stack them end over end. They'll stack them on top of each other,
okay.
And then they'll put some type of protective
that's
cover
fine.
Over them. But it doesn't allow for anybody to lay down or sit down because it's all kind of irregular, if you will.
Good.
So that's kind of how we would treat that.
That's good.
I think like I said, you see a lot of operators kind of already doing it when they care about it and they spend a lot of money on the cafe infrastructure. The others, not as much, but we feel like this is a good opportunity.
Everybody has to do it. It has to be everyone. It should be citywide, and that also will get better maintenance because otherwise in the next morning, people start walking by their cigarette butts,
right.
which we certainly don't want.
Right.
Okay, so... there's no ordinance actually attached, right? So it's a discussion regarding whether or not we want to see an ordinance. I guess conceptually people are okay with this type of
ordinance being moved forward. I would have to see the actual ordinance for my final approval, but for purposes of getting it out of committee today, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a revision to 82-385L.
No, I understand. I understand
how
that.
How legal.
I would have to, I know. Good job, Joy. Okay. No, but I would have to see how the staff inserts the language and make sure that we're comfortable with it.
Exactly. I'll second it going out of committee. I just wanted to be clear, the direction is to stack and secure, not to require anything further than that.
That's correct.
And we can work with the city attorney's office.
So let's just send it over by acclamation.
Did you want it to come back here before neighborhoods, before it gets out of?
I think we're fine having it go straight to
the commission.
If we have an issue, we can always send it back.
And it won't be till, just so you know, it won't be till November because December because there is no commission meeting.
Yeah, understood.
Okay. That's fine.
Thank you. All right. Now we're going to go to item number one. Discussion regarding crime in Miami Beach.
Well, good morning. The assistant chief here. We got the big guns.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Commissioner, Madam Chair, Commissioners, city staff, members of the audience. My name is Paul Acosta. I'm the assistant chief of police. I am over the administrative section of the police department. We had two items, Commissioner, that from our last meeting that you specifically wanted to discuss. And that was pertaining to the reorganization and promotions and where folks are landing as a result of the promotions. And then also homelessness on Miami Beach and the efforts of our police department, along with our city staff and our partners with Maria Ruiz and her team, and what we're doing about that. So we have a presentation regarding the homeless issues that we're dealing with, and we also have a conversation about the organizational chart. I think I'll take the easy one first or the quick one first, and that'll be the promotions and the organizational chart. As you know, I was promoted out of the patrol division, and I'm currently overseeing everything administratively for the police department to include the support services division, technical services division includes grants, budgeting, training, things of that nature. I deal a lot with paperwork now more so than ever before, so I'm learning my job as well. Promoted from captain to major is Major David De La Spreya. He is my replacement in the patrol division. He's in our division is in great hands, especially with our philosophy moving forward as an organization as it pertains to community policing. You're going to see a lot of different efforts by David based upon his experience and his training in the 24-plus years that he's had with our police department. Captain Henry Dose has been promoted to major. He now oversees the Criminal Investigations Division. Lieutenant Eric Garcia is promoted to captain. He now oversees specialized units, which includes the RDA, motors, canine, marine patrol, and those kinds of specialized units based out of the patrol division. Lieutenant Michael George was promoted from the CID division, and he now oversees Area 3 in the patrol division up north. Lieutenant Marlon Rivera was promoted to the rank of captain, and she now oversees Area 1. Rounding out the police command staff, I'm going to go ahead and mention Major Sam Guerrero. He commands the Support Services Division. He's here with me as well. Deputy Chief Wayne Jones oversees everything operationally. At this point, which includes our Criminal Investigations Division and Patrol Division. He's the head of both. Captain Ian Robinson, over to my left, remains in command of Area 2, Mid Beach. And Captain Danny Morgallo remains in command of Area 4, the Entertainment District. Captain Javon Campbell was the nighttime captain. He's moving over into the Criminal Investigations Unit. Captain Mimi Frogner is now in command, moving from Area 1 over to the newly formed Community Affairs Unit. We're particularly excited about that assignment. And Captain Steve Feldman remains in command of the Technical Operations Unit under the Support Services Division. And Commander A.J. Prieto moved from the Intel Unit over to Internal Affairs. That rounds out the assignments and the movements within the organization. I'm here to answer any specific questions.
I have one question. What exactly does community affairs do?
Well, I'm gonna bring up Captain Frogner here. I don't want to take her thunder, but we have a new vision in the organization. And Chief Clements and Deputy Chief Jones laid down the footprint of what we want to go over the next 4 years. And part of his vision was the creation of the Community Affairs Unit commanded by Captain Frogner.
Captain.
Good morning. My name is Mimi Frogner. I am a resident here in the city of Miami Beach. I have been a law enforcement officer for 22 years, and it is my honor and pleasure to have been asked to command this unit, Community Affairs. A little bit about the unit. As you know, Major Della Espreya, Assistant Chief Acosta, Chief Clements, and many others in the department are very excited about community policing. There are a few of us who have really taken that on as a challenge through our whole career, and it stems from just really wanting to be a part of the community and share the best that we have to offer with them. We do that through our outreach in schools, our outreach with special populations in the community, with the Big Brothers Big Sisters programs, the Kindergarten Cops, the Police Athletic League, the a variety of other programs, and we continued that, and I know it was Chief Clements' vision that a unit be developed around community policing so that we could continue to extend that, and especially to get all of the police in the department on board and reaching out to the community. So I will be overseeing the school resource officers, the park rangers, the homeless outreach team, the neighborhood resource officers, and I believe that's it.
Does it include, when you say community policing, does it include more police officers actually on the street and visiting different neighborhoods?
It does not include any more officers on the street, but it does include officers visiting more neighborhoods in a variety of ways, whether that be on ATV, on foot patrol, on bicycles. You're going to see a lot more of that. You're going to see that from the ground up. So our officers in the field training program are going to be coming in, learning the community policing aspects. They're going to be on the street in those communities, meeting with residents, visitors, business, and learning from those of us who know that concept well and want to share it with them. We will also be creating a lot of new programming, events, and community initiatives at the same time.
Like your block party.
Like the block party, yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Captain. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Captain Frogner.
Oh, I wanted to follow up very briefly.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mimi, and to all the officers and employees that live in our city. It's important, and it sends a good message to those that can be here that you're actually part of the community. And thank you all for putting on that great block party on Sunday. It was much more successful than I could have ever envisioned. And also, I think it's important that the chief and his command staff have flexibility to reorganize the department however they see fit to keep us safe and keep us informed. And then finally, it's not a question, it's a comment. I wanted to tell many of you that are here that got promoted. Unfortunately, I had to work at my paying job the day of your ceremony, but we are proud of you and congratulations, and I'm happy to see you all moving on up.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate it.
Great.
I just want to make some final comments on our new unit. In conversations with Chief Clements, one of his visions is reconnecting with a generation of young people through this community affairs unit. We have police officers in our schools. Not only are they there for the safety and well-being of our children and our teachers and staff, they're there to reconnect. You know, 20-something years ago, we used to have DARE programs and programs where the police officers were really connecting and educating and partnering with these young kids and raising them forward throughout the years. And there's a gap, a generation gap. And we kind of see that a lot of what's happening in our communities is probably affected by some of those, the lack of partnerships with our schools again. So one of the things we're going to do moving forward is really connect with the students again while we're in those schools. And hopefully on Miami Beach, every student that comes here bridge the gap between the police and the community in that way. And that's just one little direction we're going in.
Dare did a great job in the schools years back. So if you're starting something like that again with the prevalence of drugs and vaping in the schools, I think that could help a lot.
There are so many things that we can do to kind of help the kids along the way.
Are you going to talk about the homeless program at all?
Because yes,
I just
are.
Want to do a shout out that I'm so happy that you now have a homeless liaison specialist, which is Bo Hall.
Yes, ma'am.
Who was indeed homeless in Miami Beach. He's a real wonderful success story.
And yes, ma'am. Thank you.
We're very proud of him.
We're proud of him as well. We're proud of all the efforts that he has made and that of our unit. But, you know, we don't do it alone. We have great partners with Maria Ruiz and her team. I think we're the model for a lot of cities across the United States. We're being asked to talk in conferences and share what we've learned along the way, programs that are part of our everyday activities that have shown success in the lives of the homeless folks that we encounter each and every day in our city. I won't take it away from them. They have a tremendous presentation, but I wanted a shout out to Captain Robinson because he oversaw the homeless outreach unit in our department for a long time, and under his leadership, along with Sergeant Berrien, we're in such a better place at this point. Sergeant Berrien.
I'll also take the opportunity to say that on November 4th is our scheduled Monday with Mickey with our new command staff and everybody and meet your neighborhood captain, and we can discuss it also there as well. So please.
Yes, ma'am. Great. You want to start?
Good morning, Commission, our committee. So I'm going to ask my rest of my team members to come on up and join me, and we'll start our little presentation. In the essence of time, we're going to try to cut it down somewhat.
Press it down.
Press it down.
Okay. So we've toured the country now on many different occasions presenting our model of the Marchman program, and that's primarily what we're going to talk about here today. This is Officer Paredes, Officer Lantigua, Officer Merida, and we're missing Officer Yamoka, who's in class today. So as you can see, some of the pictures of us going out, talking in the community. When we talk about Miami Beach, we think of all the glitz and glamour and all the good stuff, the nightlife. But what we don't think about are these things here like this. These are pictures that we've taken in the dunes, along different areas of the beach, along the causeways. And this is something that the general public typically doesn't see, but our residents see it. Our tourists come into the city. They're not expecting to see images like this, but they're here every day, happening every day, and it's an impact to our environment, it's an impact on our brand. So what we've done with this Marchman program, the Marchman Act is an act that allows police officers to take people into protective custody in order to deliver them to treatment facilities or the nearest facility in order to get some type of evaluation and start the evaluative process. In 2016, that law changed somewhat that allows now police officers alone to become the petitioners, as opposed to family members going to a judge and asking the judge to put their family member in treatment that needed a certain amount of people. Now the police are able to do that, and we're able to do that alone and by ourselves. So the way we select the people that we're going to put into this program is that they're chronically homeless on the streets of Miami Beach. They don't have an identifiable support system, meaning that there may be family members out there, but they've been alienated for whatever the reason. So we become their de facto support system. We know where they are. We know their backgrounds. We know where they're going to be. We know their drug or substance of choice. So we're able to deal with them. We establish a rapport with them, and you know we're on a friendly basis, first name basis. Sometimes some of them have our phone numbers, and we can contact them, and they can contact us. Again, like I said, they're chronically homeless and likely to die on the streets because of their addictions to whatever substance that they're on. We've had a few that have passed away, and that's not an image that we want to have throughout our city. Third thing is that they're an extreme strain on public safety resources. Just to give you an example, we could have one homeless individual that may be the result of a call twice, 2 to 3 times per shift for our 3 shifts. So by the end of the day, that particular individual could have been the result of 8 or 9 police interactions, fire rescue interactions, code enforcement due to a lot of the debris that's around in the areas that they are. And then lastly, they have a history of Marshman X, Baker X, or arrest. So the process that we go through when we identify the person and we're going to put them into the program, I'm going to have my partner, Kevin Lantigua, talk about that.
Good morning.
Morning.
So once we identify a client that we want to put through the program, we create a case file on them. And in the case file, we include their photos, you know, their basic information, their names, date of birth, social security numbers. We'll put a lineup of degradation photos of how they've changed throughout the years due to their substance abuse. And then we'll put any kind of court paperwork that we have, you know, our petition, our marchman paperwork when we brought them to the hospital. We'll print out all their, you know, most recent arrests, Baker Acts, police contacts, any kind of police reports we have, we'll print it out, put it in their file, and then any kind of communication that we have with any of the entities that we're working with to get this person help, and any email communication that we have.
So we have different examples. We're not going to go through those examples this morning, but this is Pedro. He was one of the pictures that you saw laying on the sidewalk. A number of arrests, Baker X, Marchman X, some of the photos of him, his degradation photos over the years, him laying on the sidewalk. And this is the day that we found him on the sidewalk, and we were told by fire rescue that within the next hour or two, he would have passed away right there. Kevin was able to find him, get him back into treatment or into treatment. There's a timeline of some of the things that we had to go through to get Pedro into treatment. He was in ICU for about 5 months after we discovered him that day. Kevin would call over to ICU to see how he was doing, and he, at some point in time, he was told, don't even bother calling back over here because he's not going to make it out of here. Well, he did make it. This is Kevin following up with him on the left. He was wheelchair-bound until he went through therapy and got the use of his legs back. That's him on the right with one of the caseworkers from Thriving Mind, and he's doing well today. Another example, Kenneth, a lot of arrests, same things. Degradation photos, the one you see in 2016, he has a spit mask on because he was violent at times. Those are some of the photos that were taken from his phone. And he, once he got sober and clean, he would tell us that he would look at those pictures. Whenever he thought about drinking or using, he would look at those pictures to remind him how things used to be. His treatment line, that's him on the left, us with him at his facility on the right, doing very, very well today. And one of his suggestions to us was to Marchman Act more people. He told us that when you first go in, it's forced treatment. So when you first go in and you're kind of reluctant, but at some point in time, something clicks and the treatment takes. Some of our photos of people that we're dealing with on a regular basis. This gentleman, Joseph Olson, he was interviewed by NBC6 to talk about the success of where he's been, where we got him, how we got him off the street, and now he's gainfully employed. Some of our other people that we've dealt with, some violent, and we've gotten them into programs, into the successful program. So thus far, this program has, we've put 39 people through it. There have been many successes, probably 34 to 39 have been now put into permanent supportive housing. There are people that have taken multiple times. So a part of that process is if they leave their treatment facility and we pick them up, we can take them back to the treatment facility or we can take them to jail. And they'll do 90 days in jail, and then after they come out of jail, they'll do the 90 days treatment. So it's been very successful. It's been very well received. As I said, we've traveled the country, and we're now a national model as to this program.
I served for 2 years on the Homeless Trust for Miami-Dade County. And this is, in fact, an absolutely national success story for how a city can treat its own homeless. And I just applaud all of you for all your time and efforts It's not easy being out on the streets, and the success that you've had with some of these. I used to go to your, when you had your police round table,
yes,
and you'd go over each case and where they are and what their 200th arrest. I mean, it was just incredible. And how you've been able to get all of these people through the Marchman Act, which we support. Commissioner Simulian, I think, put something on that was already passed to provide more funds,
yes,
for more treatment at through the Marchman Act is just fabulous.
This is the way
a homeless program, to me, should be done in a city, because you're caring for the people that are here and actually giving them a new life, basically. Otherwise, they'd all be dead on the street.
It takes a dedicated, committed, compassionate officer. It also takes a vision of the city leadership, our administration, that we're able to do what we do. They give us the flexibility. They give us the authority to go out and do the things that we need to do.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Commissioner. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for all of you, your service and the progress. I'm very encouraged by the Marchman Act. Just a couple comments. Clearly, we're doing a lot. I think it's fair to say, though, our community would like to see us even do more better. Through our community survey, both residents and businesses have identified the homeless as the number one opportunity. The commission in this cycle, as Commissioner Malikoff alluded to, has allocated approximately $500,000 incremental funding. Part of it is the Marchman Fund. Another big chunk is $250,000 for the Homeless Trust. I would just say that I see good work we're doing, and I do often see opportunities. We talked a little bit earlier about Lincoln Road. Just a comment. Early in the morning, and I'm not sure if it's really in the business view or if the homeless, who should be dealing with it, I do see a significant amount of homeless 7:30 in the morning on a weekend day lying in the street. So I just want to call that out. That's an area I've personally observed. If I had two requests here, we could do it now or when it makes sense. One is, given that we've set aside $250,000 more for the Homeless Trust, I would encourage MPBD, working with our housing service and the administration, to come forward. How do we get the most value for that money? What is it that you'd like to see? Is it even more treatment beds? What else should we do? We've set aside that money. How do we get our biggest return? And second, it may have been in the presentation, but are there any recommendations or ideas you have of things that we could be doing more and better that we're not doing today? We have an item at finance. We're exploring it, but I'd love to hear from you today or my colleagues. What else should we be doing?
I was going to ask that as well.
So in terms of how the allocations of money will go, I'd sit down with the administration as well as Maria's team, and we'll discuss how we're going to move forward, okay, with that additional money. We thank you for that. Additional treatment beds is always a great thing, and I know that funding is going to help that. In terms of what we can do more, I mean, you guys have really made a huge step in providing this additional funding. My team is, we're four people with Bo Hall. Bo was a tremendous, tremendous addition to the team. He does all of our follow-up. He goes out and does visits to the different facilities. He's been a godsend to us in terms of the organization of the team. Right off the top of my head, I can't think of anything more at this point in time other than the additional funding.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's great. I mean, thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Gongora, this was your original item. I don't know if you have any final thoughts or any comments or any recommendations.
Sure, thank you. First of all, thank you all for the presentation. Crime, safety, and now homelessness, these are bread and butter issues that are our residents' biggest concerns. I mean, these are the issues that people living quietly at their house are concerned about, more so sometimes than a lot of the other issues that we talk about, which is why I wanted to put this as a monthly item. And I've appreciated you coming out, not only because it educates this committee, but for the people that watch this at home as it's replayed, it really educates them as well on what we're doing as a city. So I love the item. Unfortunately, our Neighborhoods Committee agenda has grown a lot over the past year, and we have a number of items. So I'm going to make a recommendation that we start doing this bi-monthly instead of monthly. so that you don't have to be here every month, and it allows us to get through other business. Perhaps when you come back in 2 months, you could look into the question raised by Commissioner Samuel, and if there's anything further you need from this committee, as well, maybe, rather than us direct you, we don't know what the hot issue is going to be 2 months ahead of time. Perhaps a week or two before the committee meetings, you could reach out to the members of the committee with your ideas as what you want to present and have the committee members let you know what they're thinking at that time might be relevant for the residents to hear.
I just want to make one final comment. As we talk about some of these issues, and, you know, it's as we tackle them in certain areas of their city, you know, you squeeze the balloon, so it goes somewhere. So I want us to also make sure we're watching the middle and north corridors, because I know we've had some incidences up in the north end recently, more so because such the focus has been maybe on the south. There's nowhere else to go, but it ends up moving to other areas of the city. So, you know, as someone said earlier, it's like whack-a-mole, right? You try to deal with this issue, and then it pops up over here and so on and so forth. So whatever you can do to keep that on your radar would be very appreciated.
And we do that. We move around. We use a lot of the information that Maria provides in terms of her daily counts to see where the focus is, to see where the migration has gone. And we go into those areas, Open Space Park. We work very closely with the NROs and the captains of those different areas. And we try to stay on top of things.
If I can just add one. I know the answer to this. If I could just ask a more question for your benefit. What do you do on Lincoln Road in the morning time, early morning hours, and how often do you do it?
So we try to get out to Lincoln Road at least once a month, sometimes twice, depending on the levels of the numbers of people that are out there. And we'll go out about 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 in the morning, and we drive Lincoln Road or walk Lincoln Road. And a lot of the issues that were brought up earlier with the lounging on the chairs and those things of that nature, it's a sanitary issue, for one, and I know that those businesses are affected by that. But what we do is we go out and we try to offer services. We have beds that are available. We have 5 after-hour shelter beds. So if we encounter a person at 3 o'clock in the morning who wants shelter, we can offer that shelter to them. Sometimes they take it, sometimes they don't. We can refer them to 555 once they open. If there's crimes that are being committed, because we do a computer check on a lot of those, on everybody that we encounter, and we've encountered people with sexual battery pass, we've encountered people that have been registered sexual offenders who have not registered, we've encountered people with warrants, and all sorts of things out there. The area itself is conducive to crime because it's poorly lit in those areas. There's furniture that are around that people can hide behind. So it's tough. But we try to go out and touch everybody that's on Lincoln Road to see what purpose that they have there, run them, look for warrants, things of that nature, offer the services, and talk to them a little bit about what we offer here in the city of Miami Beach.
Since we don't meet in November, I don't think we meet in November, do we? No. December, I guess we'll see them back?
Sure
thing. See you in December.
Actually, you might want to let us know because of the timing of that, if we have any information with regard to Super Bowl crime plans and what's going to be happening in the city.
Okay. I just want to add my thanks to all of you. I won't be here when you come back here, but just keep doing what you're doing and keep the commission abreast of what your needs are.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you,
Commissioner. Madam Chair, if I could for a second, I just want to say thank you to all of the commissioners for continuing to fund this extremely important program, and thank you to all of you for not just the very difficult work that you're doing on a day-in, day-out basis, but also the partnership that you're partnering with the Office of Community Services and making sure that we're all working towards helping these folks in a respectful way. And I think that shows in not just the success stories that you put up there, but the way that we're actually making a difference in the community. So keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Public comment, 2 minutes.
Sorry, John.
Unless it's John. Just kidding.
Really quickly, John Dutzman. I am an administrator of the Miami Beach Crime Prevention and Awareness Group. Mark keeps asking, you guys keep asking, what more can we do? We have a national model here that's working. Do more of it. Maybe we add more bodies. I know we have limited bodies. It's an example of how Ocean Drive and that disaster sucks bodies away to babysit those businesses when we could maybe double this and do something that the residents want. The residents, number one, problem is quality of life, and that message has not been delivered. Still, we keep saying it, but it hasn't hit the streets yet. Double this. It's working. The other point is, I love the fact that you started this drama with crime every meeting. I think since it's the number one thing for the residents, the quality of life, maybe there should be a commission-based quality of life committee, and maybe eliminate one of the committees. There's a lot of weird committees, but this is the number one concern. So maybe you need a commissioner-based, not just the, you know, public-based quality of life / crime committee every month. Create a new one, and maybe get rid of some of the weird stuff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Gianpaolo Mosconi, I'm a longtime resident in the North Beach area. And first of all, I appreciate everything everybody back here is doing. This is a big issue on the North Beach end. It is on the beach itself in the morning. I walk my dogs all over the area, behind buildings, so forth, so on. I work closely with Julio Blanco, who helps me as much as possible in addressing this. But, you know, to his point, we need more of them doing this great work, because a lot of these people are having an impact on our visitors. I've actually experienced visitors coming into the city asking for directions and getting harassed and assaulted verbally by, unfortunately, these homeless people who need help. So whatever you guys can do to make more of them happen, that would be greatly appreciated in all of Miami Beach, not just South Beach area, but North Beach as well, Mid Beach. It's very, the residents, you can see it on social media everywhere. They share their experiences and stories, and it's important to not neglect them up there as well. So thank you for what you guys do.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. Any more questions, Commissioner?
No, I think we're good. And as I stated, we're going to have that Monday with Mickey, November 4th, with our police. So that should be also very informative, and I invite everybody to come. And moving on to item number 3, Commissioner Samulin, additional avenues for public engagement.
Sure, I'll tee it up as Tanya's coming forward. We've had this sort of on a quarterly basis. I think we've made some important progress. We've got a new tool, the engagement toolbox, with all our tools in one spot. I believe we had our first electronic, or one of our first recent sort of electronic forms that was done at the Colony on sea level rise. So in terms of today's discussion, there's sort of three broad areas. One is we had talked about maybe doing some more electronic, whether it's Facebook or Twitter-related opportunities, perhaps with others on the commission, so we'd love to understand that. Number two, how is take-up on our tools? So how many folks are using the engagement toolbox? Do we have take-up on residents' right to know, resident connect, so sort of the measures? And number three, what other opportunities are in front of us? So I'll turn it over to Tanya.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Tanya Daniels, Director of Marketing Communications. I wanted to, first off, introduce all of you in case you have not met him. So Kevin Pulido from my office is responsible for community outreach. Kevin is kind of considered the concierge for the city and our residents, and he is the direct connect between our residents, our HOAs in the city, and any questions that they may have. He attends HOA meetings. He is scheduling meetings with the HOA presidents, and so I just wanted to make sure that each of you had a good idea of who Kevin was, and he also has his ear to, you know, to our residents and knows what a lot of their thoughts and concerns are. They come to him for questions. They all very, very well know him. They have his cell phone number, and they reach out to him frequently. So I just wanted to introduce Kevin and make sure everybody here had a chance to meet him or talk to him.
I have seen him at every event I've been to recently.
He is also a proud resident of Miami Beach and started working in the city of Miami Beach when he was, I think, a newborn for our Parks and Recreation Department. So he knows our city very well.
Yeah.
We're lucky to
Kevin
have him.
Was recently at LaGore's Pine Tree Homeowners Association, and he's also giving the information on Nextdoor, the online, because there's a lot of misinformation. We're raising our parking when it's the county raising parking,
right,
et cetera. So I think that's very important to keep reading it and responding on behalf of the city.
Yes, he does a great job with that. So I will go over a couple of the items that you mentioned, Commissioner Samulin. So the engagement toolbox activity online is actually really good. So the amount of clicks since July 1st has been 1,500. To put that into perspective, that puts it in the top 10 of the most clicked on pages on our website. The average visit time on the page is about a minute, which is good because it means that they're looking at it, but they're also finding what they need fairly quickly. So I was really very happy to see that people are really very much using the engagement toolbox. For residents' right to know, I asked IT, because IT is the one that I believe kind of administers the residents' right to know, them in partnership with our legal department. So there's 204 people that have signed up for the residents' right to know, and there's 444 people who have signed up for keyword notifications through NB Resident Connect. So people are getting information throughout those outlets as well. And 91 people are actually, fun fact, signed up for both of them. So some of the things that you were speaking of in regards to Facebook Live and events like that, so we are making our headway and doing more things like that. So to do a Facebook Live, it's not as easy as it sounds, because if you think about it, when you put a phone in front of somebody and want to go live on Facebook, the sound is not going to be great because you're relying on your phone or your iPad or whatever to pick up the sound around. So you have to do it in an environment where you're hardwired into some sort of sound system like we did at the Colony Theater. So we are looking at more town halls of that type to be able to do. Eric and I actually just spoke recently about possibility of doing one and sharing information on the Biscayne Bay Task Force report. We are also considering doing one on homelessness. We're also scheduling some upcoming community meetings regarding resilience and our Rising Above education campaign that are going to be quarterly, and we're looking at ways of taking those live. We did just purchase a microphone that will connect into the phone to start to test that to be able to do more Facebook Live events. And we are also implementing a tool in our commission chambers here that while we are live on MBTV, it will also stream live on our social media channels. So we're looking at adding that right now. So we're looking at more ways to include that. I do want to reiterate that whenever we are live on MBTV, we are streaming live on the internet, and it is always shared on our social media channels. So while it's not live on our social media channels, we do always provide the link to directly view it on our website. We are also working on scheduling, Kevin's working now on scheduling quarterly meetings with our HOA presidents. Fun fact for that, we have about 20 of them that has signed up through the formal registration of the HOA policy that was set a while back through legal and approved by commission. So they register through a format online, and that is shared with the clerk, and it is all public record. It gives all of the information about, you know, how often they meet, if they have any charges, who they cover, who their members are, when they do elections. All of that information is public, held publicly through our clerk, and is also posted on our website. And there's about 20 of them that have signed up through that. Kevin is working on getting that number up, and we'll work on that as he schedules this next meeting. And we have also implemented monthly full PIO meetings in our office. So there's a lot of external PIOs that do community outreach for construction projects and things like that. And our office has started to coordinate, because they don't report to our office, but it's really important that we all communicate and talk together about the messages that are shared and the projects that are going on. And so Kevin is also coordinating that, making sure all of the PIOs are talking and that we're communicating internally as well as externally to our residents.
Commissioner.
I think that's good progress. I think we've moved the needle here. I'm pleased with the take-up on the toolbox. So I think we can wrap this item up for now. It's obviously sort of an ongoing topic, but I think in the spirit of a busy agenda here, I think what we could move to is perhaps an LTC that would update us.
You want to do a quarterly LTC that keeps us in the loop?
I think that would be helpful. And I'd like to make the focus around the things we've just talked about, the use of electronic tools, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, to engage, toolbox, resident right to know, and resident connect, because I think residents in this community lovely have an unquenching desire for information, and so the more tools we've got, but I think we can close out the item with a quarterly update would be my thought.
I'll adopt that as my motion.
Okay, by acclamation. The only suggestion I would make, since we have, you know, I think you said about 400 people using like Resident Connect and 200 using the other toolbox, maybe we can just make sure we get the word out again and remind people that we have those tools easily and accessible to them and try to get that number higher. But great job, guys.
They are also in the engagement toolbox as one of the quick links to get to.
Excellent.
So, yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. I know I had a request to take something out of order, item number 11, anti-bully task force. Commissioner Gongora?
Thank you. I'll cue it up. After my election, I focused on anti-bullying, and with the support of the commission, we created the anti-bullying task force, which has been going on for about 2 years now, and they issued a pretty thorough committee report with a series of recommendations about different things that could be implemented by the city. I think some of these we're going to have to get our legal department involved with, but we're joined by the vice chair of the committee, Scott Bader. Are you the chair now?
Chair.
Okay, the chair. Congratulations. and I'm going to turn it over to you to present the report.
Great.
Nice haircut.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Commissioners, so we've been meeting for about a year and a half, and one of the things that we had the most issues with was tracking information down. So some of our recommendations here where we say we couldn't find something or it doesn't exist, maybe it does, so please correct me if I'm wrong. The original resolution was to address bullying with youth, but we found that bullying happens in a variety of ways, and we've extended that to be adults. In addition to that, we found bullying can happen a variety of ways. We even had an anonymous tip come to us of a city employee being bullied by another city employee. Then we figured out, well, is there a handbook? Is there an employee manual? We could not find a city employment manual, which we found to be curious. One of the things that we want to do in addition to having bullying not defined between just youth is that it doesn't have to be a repeat occurrence to be defined as bullying. So we went through the Parks and Recreation Department was really the only place where we found anything relevant to having any sort of policy for anti-bullying. So we redlined that document. We found that some of the items in there needed to be reworded. We've done that, and what we are recommending is this be used now as a template for other departments. So have it be rebranded to that specific department and have something that can be used in other areas of the city. So that would be the main thing I'd want to answer any questions on, since it would be used as one of our recommendations as a template before we speak about some of the amendments that we're suggesting to the other documents.
Any questions from the commissioners? Okay. I don't have questions that I think we can answer today, because as I read the report, it's pretty comprehensive and it would require some major changes. So in order for us to be able to implement these, I think the better course of action would be if we continue this item and between now and our next meeting, if you and I meet with the city attorney's office so we can figure out a game plan of specific action items that we could put before the committee at the next meeting to be able to move this forward.
I have one question. You talk at some length. You did a whole legal brief on anti-bullying. Thank you, Michael. Nice having lawyers here. Cyberbullying. Can you just tell me what that is?
Yeah. One of the things that we found is, especially with youth, if they're being bullied in school, with the social media aspect of where our society is right now, they have no respite from bullying. They go home, and they still get bullied online. So cyberbullying, we figured, is using social media channels. Could also be texting, emailing. Bullying can happen outside of just a personal interaction. And we really do find that, you know, youth need some sort of respite, and that this needs to include the cyberbullying aspect of it, and we found it to be actually one of the major issues. We found it to be the biggest amount of bullying occurring.
I was wondering about that, and I don't know how you stop it, though. I know Michael said the city has an absolute regulation against cyberbullying, but how is it caught? How is it stopped? I have no idea.
I don't think we do either. A lot of our suggestions are nomenclature to existing policies. For example, with the employee reference that I was making, the only policy in the city is for harassment, and it doesn't include bullying. So we looked at a variety of documents that we could find in the fish tank, but again, we might have missed something.
I think the difficulty that we have, Commissioner Malakoff, is obviously we can put the policy in for our employees that work for us, and I think by virtue of our contractual relationships with vendors, we could add those into contracts with companies that do business with the city. But unfortunately, I don't know that we have the jurisdiction to regulate bad behavior from the public at large.
Because our school kids are the main ones that are being, I think, that are being bullied online.
Correct.
And I just have no idea how you'd stop it.
We are also recommending, you know, additional support for No Place for Hate, which is in the school districts as well. In addition to the front-facing as far as the community, you know, fully supporting the City Kindness and Be Kindness program as well, in addition to the Safe Place program of adding an anti-bullying commitment to those businesses that, you know, are safe spaces, part of that program.
I also think by virtue of the fact that we have a committee and we're having this discussion and the city is sending out a public sentiment that we stand united against cyberbullying of all forms. And we see it happen from time to time on Facebook and other social media platforms. Certainly some disgusting behavior to highlight was the incident on Ocean Drive with the black lady that was not only thrown out of an Airbnb, but called all kinds of horrible racist names. So I think whatever we can do as a body to highlight this issue and send out a public message that this type of behavior is wrong, not tolerated, and not welcomed by the city also helps fertilize and strengthen that message. But you have some real good kind of meat and potatoes specific suggestions that I think we're going to have to get our legal team involved in, which is why I think all we can do today is, you know, I'll make a motion that we approve your recommendations and we have to see how we can implement them and bring them back.
I'll second that.
Yep. By acclamation? Wait,
I
think, question?
Madam Chair, just if I could, and I echo your sentiment that these are excellent recommendations, and I just wanted to make sure everyone was aware that as a result of these recommendations, we've already incorporated those the recommendations into the human resources policy.
Okay.
That's done.
Excellent.
As of today already, and our Parks Department is already working on making the amendment to the Parks policy that you had recommended. They've been working with legal on that just to make sure that that gets done. Also, our HR director and our Parks director are here if you had any questions, but we appreciate your work, and we think these are good constructive criticism.
Good. Thank you very much, and that makes us very happy because we felt like we were kind of spinning the wheels in the mud a little bit, so really appreciate that.
We are a city of kindness.
I was just going to say
yeah.
that.
And please share with the other members of the task force as well that we really appreciate the work and the energy that went into this. Not all of our committees prepare detailed reports like you did, so this is very helpful.
Really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here today.
You bet.
I'm going to take items number 4, which is related to 41st Street, but also items 8 and 9 are also related to 41st Street. So why don't we take 4, 8, and 9, while they're not all the same item, they all are related to the same item, and I think we have the same presenters, if that's okay with everybody.
Sure.
Okay. So items number 4, 8, and 9 regarding the 41st Street corridor. As far as the update on the lighting of the trees and then also go into some of the motions that were referred over, which I believe a lot of the motions were actually just to defer. So Commissioner Samulin, some of their own committee member motions were to just defer some of the items. So you'll let me know how you want to handle that.
Yeah.
We have the chair of the 41st Street committee here.
Sorry.
So the... Seth is here. basically, we've met with them several times to discuss this pilot project on upgrading the lighting on 41st Street. Initially, we had a sort of temporary installation, rope-type lighting, which we felt wouldn't last in that environment. We proceeded to get our holiday lighting contracted to find a more permanent solution, and through a pilot that they installed, it didn't hold up very well. They had to do some minor modifications, and at the request of committee, or that 41st Street committee, what they realized is they actually want some time to review, and I know Goodell's been a tremendous resource for us in helping that effort, but they basically want to go off for RFP for some other implementation for that corridor. And I'll ask Seth if he wants to discuss the actual rope lighting. I know you had opportunities to with Jim Morrison and others, but the recommendation is to go off for RFP for enhanced lighting at this time.
Seth, please.
Hi, Seth Kadinsky. Are we doing this? Do I have to say who I am? As you know, I chair the committee and for 41st Street, and we did a pilot program with the rope lighting, like you've seen in Surfside and on Washington Avenue, and we all went out there at night. Actually, and felt that they did a really shoddy job. It looked like crap, to be honest with you. And then we were shown some samples of what the up lighting could really look like in the trees, and it was night and day. Really something special could be done on the street with the uplighting as opposed to the rope lighting. And then you don't have the maintenance issues and a lot of, and you can be, and they can change. We don't have to spend the money on the holiday lighting because they can change, the colors can change as you want them. So there will be some savings there. So anyway, this all just happened last week, and we sort of shifted our focus away from trying to do the rope lighting to something a little more artistic and also something that no one else has really done. So that's where we're headed with that.
And to add, just for the record, the electrical infrastructure is on the light poles and not necessarily in the bases of the palms that are out there. So you have to basically run the electrical through palm by palm by palm to get to the nearest outlet. So what happens is it looks kind of messy. And to Seth's point, I think there's opportunities now when Public Works upgrades those light poles and through this process that we find a more permanent solution with uplighting. We've been able to do some pretty interesting things with uplighting or downlighting, if you will, on palm trees at the Jackie Gleason. So I think there's a lot of opportunities that if we put it out there, we're able to see what the best solution or the best possible vehicle to get this program implemented. Okay.
When you drive down 41st Street, when we're done, it's going to be special, and that's really what we're going for. And before, it was kind of run-of-the-mill. So.
Okay, so we got the lighting squared away?
Yeah, there's a recommendation from committee to go out for RFP on a lighting package.
Okay, yeah, they so just appropriated $10 million for the lighting. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. You were gone. Yeah. You missed that.
Yeah, I mean, Monopoly money. So, no, that's great. We do have money allocated for this, don't we, already reserved?
Yes, it's part of the GEO bond for an enhancement of 41st.
Okay, so what do we have to do to move
that
forward?
No, it's just an update. This was a discussion item that's been we've gone through. The
so we can withdraw that off now. We're done with that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll come back with the procurement at a later date through commission.
Excellent. And then items 8 and 9.
Yep.
Madam Chair, if I may, just to tee this up. So there are a number of items here, but I think we can sort of synthesize and combine. Some of them were withdrawals. I'll rely on city staff to make sure that we're addressing everything that needs to be addressed. I think the most critical motion is in item 8, a motion basically to expand the scope of the work there, instead of just being on 41st, that we're going to take a district-wide approach from 40th to 42nd. So I believe the recommendation from the committee is to do that, and you're looking for our approval to do that. Is that accurate?
Commissioner, that is. We are looking for approval to move forward to hire a consultant to do a district-wide study.
I move that we do that.
Okay, so that passes committee. What's next?
What about the uplighting?
We just did that.
Right. Moving fast.
Yeah. That one moved forward. We're good.
That's wonderful. Is so.
Oh, and then item number 3, the third motion about the farmers produce artisanal market.
Do you need action or is that just an update?
It's on which?
On the artisanal market.
The market company.
I think Jadel, help.
It's more of an update.
It's more of an update, but I heard that the dates may want to be changed.
Yeah, well, we were to January. We don't want to change it, but the reality is we'd be rushing something, and we want it to be successful, and there's no point in rushing something and have it be unsuccessful. We really want this to be something special that catches on for the 90-day trial and hopefully becomes a permanent thing, so we thought it was prudent. There's a lot of stuff to go through, red tape, if you will, that will be a little time, and then she's got to get the vendors, and so we just thought, go, Jadel, you look like you want to speak. So.
Well, good morning, commissioners. I wanted to add that we've been speaking with a specific consultant with the farmer's market, and with that farmer's market, the intent is to show activation within that space, within that 41st Street corridor. The person that's doing the farmer's market, Claire Tomlin, she suggested initially November 3rd, but we want to go ahead and do the process the right way, and that will include consideration of permits and, you know, other things that would have to go through protocol. So she's looking at a date around January.
Okay. Yeah. Fine. You'll keep us posted.
Yeah. We'll see you there.
Yeah.
Yes, so, definitely.
We've covered off on lighting. We've covered off on the consultant expanding the scope with a positive recommendation. Are there any other outstanding motions that you need this body to make a judgment? I think those were them, but I just, before we move on, anything else?
Commissioner Samlin, I think you hit all three of them right on the button.
Okay, I think.
Okay, so we're going to move. Thank you for that update. I think we can remove these items from this agenda, do you think?
Yes.
At this time. Okay, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And then as more motions come forward, yeah. I'm sure
well. Well, the motion to rename the street Seth Kadinsky Boulevard failed in committee. But I haven't given up on that one yet. So.
Can we try again to have it named 41st Street?
Yeah. And Seth, thank you. Sorry that one didn't work, but thank you to you and your committee. You guys have produced, and ladies have produced, a lot of great work and information. We tried to synthesize it here, but there's tremendous amount going in, and we're supportive of what you're doing.
Your support is really critical, believe me. And I've said it publicly before. We have consistent staff that are dedicated with the people on the committee. We had a nighttime meeting, and basically everybody showed up. There's real passion in the community, and I think it's going to start to show.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean,
so, 41st
Street is one of the main entries to Miami Beach, and yet it hasn't been beautified. There hasn't gotten any tender, loving care it looks like it did when I was working in various banks on 41st Street, and that's a long time ago.
I know, but we're going to change that.
Good.
Okay. Thank you, Seth.
Thank you
for being here.
Thank
All
you
right,
for your work and the committee's work, Seth.
Thank you. I'm loving it, by the way.
Item number 5, 34th Street, Alton, Prairie Avenue, Chase Avenue, pedestrian and bicycle feasibility study. Are we ready to roll? Oh, and then we'll do leaf blowers next. That was the request. I apologize. Actually, you want to do that real quick? Would you prefer? Okay. Let's just do this.
Let's do it next.
Good morning. Linda Weston, Transportation.
Good morning.
We do have a presentation, or if you would like, you have seen it before, we could go directly to the recommendations.
I know that we have shown that presentation here.
Mm-hmm.
I just have a few comments or questions, but why don't you just set us up, give us the overall of what you would like us to do today?
Sure. There are actually three studies that are included in this project. We would like approval of the intersection improvements at Alton, Chase, and North Bay Road. We would like recommendation approving the proposed improvements to Chase and 34th Street, excluding the landscaped trellis. We had community input that was not something that they wanted to see move forward. We also had community input on some proposed traffic calming concepts. The recommendation that is currently from us for the community at Chase and 34th is to examine a triangular traffic circle. I know that may not go together, but we support moving forward with the analysis of that. We need to caveat that, though. It does need to be looked at by the county and meet engineering standards, but we can certainly move forward with that as the first recommendation, and we can come back to you if that doesn't work out.
And also for the public, in our supplemental, the presentation is attached. So if anybody would like to go online and see that, thank you for adding that to the supplemental. Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions before we...
I,
Yes.
I'm sorry, because I missed it. I was reading something. The only question I had, because we've had this pending forever, and you know that the Neighborhood Association, did you address the traffic calming issue that they were asking about, a different configuration?
Yes, we're happy to look forward to that. Board to look into that as their first recommendation. We do need to run some technical analysis on it and have it reviewed by the county. So if it doesn't work out, we'll come back to you and let you know.
Commissioners, the only thing I did receive an email, and these were some of the feedback I received, just so I can share, that staff's proposed, that they do not oppose the administration's recommendations, but they have some suggestions overall that they would like to see, that they prefer, which is the proposed traffic calming for 34th and Chase to be removed and replaced with two preferred concepts presented by the residents. The residents' preferred concept is attached to the email I was given, and I'm sure you've seen this and heard of this, and so this is what you're going to be looking at, right?
Right.
Did you receive a copy of that?
Yes, we received something very recently, but that's definitely something we can look into.
Perfect. It includes the installation of the two speed tables between Alton and 34th as referenced in the memo. It includes the two proposed, so they talk about the proposed circles on 34th, Prairie, and Sheridan, as referenced in the memo, and the plans for the project to return for further vetting by the committee and or commission should its construction occur over easements that may be necessary for future undergrounding of utilities. I guess the concern is at some point in the future, if they want to go underground, whatever we do, they want to make sure that we're conscientious of that and putting that on the record for them. And of course, to preserve any existing mature trees would be the preference. Commissioner Malikoff?
I notice in the proposed Chase Avenue landscape palette, you list both royal palms and cabbage palms, and yet plus sea grapes and thatched palm. The palette that the city's using now is mostly excluding palm trees and putting in more canopy trees. So there may be reasons because of electric wires why you can't put certain trees. But wherever possible, we're looking to put in canopy trees, not straight palms. And royal palms, they're beautiful, they're stately, but when the fronds fall from a height, they can crack people's windshields or heads.
We'll work closely with our urban forester to put the right species in the right spot, and protect from golf balls. That's been one of the concerns.
Understood. Thank you.
So let's move this from committee to the full commission, pending some of these either comments and feedback.
Right. As I read the email, it seems to highlight different parts of the recommendations. It seems to be completely in sync. The only thing that seems different, as I read it, is really the configuration for the traffic calming on 34th and Chase. They have two preferred methods. Other than that, they just seem to be highlighting different things that staff is recommending. So I'll move it. You don't want to be in committee anymore. I'm going to move it forward with a positive recommendation. I would ask that you review and try to give one of the two preferred configurations that they have for the traffic calming and incorporate their email.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, by acclamation. I guess when it comes to committee four or five times, we then have the opportunity to move it quicker. No.
Yeah.
Leaf blowers, item number, Commissioner, this is your item?
Seven.
Item number seven.
Sure. This is co-sponsored by Commissioner Samulin and me. Leaf blowers, as I've stated many times, have been a constant source of displeasure to me and a number of residents over the years. And I'll state again publicly that I would like to do away with them altogether, but I don't seem to have the support. The city still uses them. So what we've been doing with regard to leaf blowers and other power tools is we've been restricting their usage more and more and limiting their hours. What passed, as I think what passed at commission last time on first reading, was a further restriction on their usage to modify the morning hours to 10 a.m. I think that was what we were able to squeak out at commission.
Right, and we kept the evening hours till 8 p.m.
Correct. We kept the evening hours as they're currently there. It basically pushed back the hours of usage to allow our residents that sleep in or work night shifts to not be bothered. And I hear complaints about this from all over the place, from people that live near Lincoln Road, from people that live over near the hotel corridor on Collins and 29th and 30th. I personally don't think they do any legitimate cleaning. They just blow the mess from one area to the other rather than actually pick it up. But it is a form of noise pollution, and it isn't just leaf blowers. It's power tools that make noise. One of the things that was discussed at commission was in the single-family neighborhoods.
Right.
I think Commissioner Steinberg had a concern, would this incorporate people that wanted to mow their lawn?
Mm-hmm.
I think was your specific question.
Probably.
Right.
And how do we could carve something out for that?
I disagree with this. Living in, I think I'm one of the few commissioners that still live in a single-family home in a residential district. And the gardeners that use the electric mowers and the leaf blowers at single-family homes, I don't know who's working in the commercial districts or the hotel district or the Lincoln Road district, but in single-family homes, the gardeners that are there cutting the lawn and doing the very hot, menial tasks are primarily immigrants from various countries. And to ask them to work, to stop in the heat of the day, to not work until 10 a.m., they're missing the morning hours when it's a little bit cooler. I mean, it can be 110 degrees out there, and I don't think it's right to ask people to wait till 10 a.m. to start cutting lawns and or using leaf blowers. It's mean.
I think some people in the public are here to speak on the side of maybe we should
open it
up to them.
Public. And thank you for waiting for our entire morning.
Yeah, I'm frozen.
Yes,
good morning. So I'm Ceci Bertomeu. I live on 2899 Collins. So right there I have three blowers activity. My own building, they just do it once a week. They do it fast, and they do it after 9 or 10. Then we have the city, because that's the 29th entrance to the beach. And I don't know what they really do, but they take a lot of time, and I have videotaped them. And they're just, you know, moving leaves or dust and all of the above all over the place and take breaks to be on their phones and stuff. I have that recorded. And those are the gas-powered leaf blowers. And then we have the addition, and the addition has bought the electric ones that they're very... they love to use them. They use them every day, all day, and they think they don't make any noise, but they do. It's like a gigantic dentist drill, you know? It's like, all day. So I've gone there in person in a very friendly manner, and they're very friendly too, but they don't change anything. And I call code, but I've been told that they are allowed to do that from 7 a.m., to 8 p.m. every day of the week. So it's 13 hours that they can play with their thing every day. So if you could help us, this is quality of life again, you know.
That's noise from the hotel gardeners you're talking about?
Excuse me?
Is this from the hotel?
Yeah, the ones that start very early is the addition. And also, if they can start at 7, they start a little earlier, though, because by the time that you understand what's going on, that you cannot sleep, you call code. Code comes, it's already 7. And they do that with a number of things, and we've been complaining. So it's 151 units in my building of the 563 that are facing the addition. So we have a big thing there. And I put up 4 polls on Facebook and 4 different residents groups, and 90% of the people who answered for yes or no, I'm not going to count the indifference, they don't like them for the noise and for the fumes that are very toxic. Actually, I can open my window when they're using them.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming today.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yes.
So the Rick Kendall 969 Bay. We should not be worried about the hours. We should be banning gas blowers. They put out more pollution than old automobiles do. Towns like Palm Springs, just banned them. I think it's great that the addition is doing electrical ones. That's no pollution. So, and 10 o'clock is too late in the day. Those guys, they get to work early. They get to work at 8, 8:30, something like that. I think 8 p.m. is too late. But I think we should actually just send this back, look at the pollution, look at what Palm Springs and other progressive cities have done, and decide to just ban these things completely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
So we heard a lot of things about leaf blowers, but we haven't heard why we use them. So I remember years ago, the city green space, which is now who takes care of them, who now currently doesn't, used to go around and thin out the trees that were on the curbs and so forth, so on. Keep them clean, trim properly, and that in essence limits the amount of leaves that we have on the ground. Right now in my neighborhood in North Beach and Normandy Isles, they come and blow leaves into the street, and then you have the street vacuum come. So you have both things making noise. And I understand they have to do it to keep the neighborhood clean. But the tree canopy itself is not being properly maintained. And I've reached out to Green Space, and then Green Space tells me it's the property owners whose swales, city swales in front of, to responsibility to take care of that, which doesn't make sense to me. If the city plants a tree, the city should maintain the tree or not plant it at all. But the city has a tendency of planting trees everywhere and then not keeping them up. And that's
I agree, and we tried a couple of years ago to change that, but it's a budgetary constraint.
Okay, and I understand it costs money to maintain them, but we should look at other means possible, whether it's outsourcing it. I know in Brightview does a lot of the work in my neighborhood along with the city. So I'm a little confused when I see Brightview doing landscaping and in our city. And it's like switch back and forth. Yeah. So
no, I agree.
Just somehow streamline it to one entity and make them responsible for the upkeep of those trees properly. Because what happens in the hurricane season, if winds come, and we lost a lot of trees during Irma because they were just too full, they just topple over. And then they end up getting chopped up and thrown away. So a little bit more upkeep on the trees would be beneficial to everybody, unless leaf blowers.
Thank you. Yes, that's Mark? Great.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you to the public for coming out on this. Thank you also for the effective advocacy on social media. We definitely are hearing the feedback. So I just sort of want to bring us back to what we need to decide here today. The issue of gas leaf blowers and the city's effort to transition is actually a separate item, which is going to sustainability. My understanding is the city has made a commitment to transition away from gas blowers, and what we're going to focus on sustainability is the status, the timing, any opportunities to accelerate. So, important item for another day. For today, the most critical decision I think this body needs to make is to what extent, if at all, single-family homes will be treated different than the commercial areas. We passed on first reading, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. There was no issue with the commercial district because we were basically getting in line with construction hours. There was some dialogue, which Commissioner Malikoff again mentioned, about single-family homes, whether they should be treated differently either for mowing lawns or gas blowers. I think we need that decision today and then taking that to the full commission.
I think it's 8 a.m. I don't think it's 7 a.m.
So today, what is the current policy existing for the time of construction and noise in our city?
So for construction, it should be weekends, holidays, 8 to 8.
And during the week?
During the week it's longer, but I don't have that off the top of my head.
I think we need to know that, so we, because this is an amendment to that, right? So
we're no. This is not an amendment.
Well, it's an amendment to all noise work.
No, this is only an amendment for that provision dealing with power tools and landscaping. It does not impact.
Power tools falls under construction to some degree, doesn't it? It's not just power tools for cleaning, is it?
It's a separate it's a separate ordinance provision dealing with the construction aspect of the noise ordinance.
The construction is 10 a.m., correct?
No, he just said no. Eight.
It's eight, and I think it's I don't have that before me. But we what we did for this specific amendment was we referenced the time to have it consistent. So the time that we amended this specific provision is consistent with what the time is for weekends and holidays. Does that make sense?
Wait, so no one can start any sort of work with a power tool before 10 a.m. in the city of Miami Beach?
That was the current proposed amendment, which is consistent with the time in for construction. Mm-hmm. That's what we were trying to equalize.
I'm trying to understand. Okay.
We basically, Madam Chair, we basically said that these power tools, gas blowers, et cetera, would be in sync. So whatever construction times were, these would be the same.
Correct, for weekends and holidays.
Right, but he's saying only for weekends and holidays. He's going to make that be the seven-day-a-week model. Is that what you're saying?
For what we have currently proposed? No, currently we propose is for weekends and holidays.
So we're not talking during the week. We're just talking on the weekends.
Correct.
So the week, I just want to get that clear for the record because people have had a lot of misinformation on this particular thing. Also for the gas blowers, Commissioner Samuelin, you hit it on the nail. You're correct. That is a distinctly different issue right. that we're going to be discussing that I would love to see us do away with completely mm-hmm. as a city. And I know we're working towards that goal as a municipality and our governmental agencies. But so that's going to be a great discussion. As far as what's in front of us today, specific to weekend and holiday hours, okay, that's what's on the agenda for today. So I just want to clarify. And that is for all power tools and landscaping equipment. That includes lawn mowers. That includes leaf blowers, electric or otherwise. That includes mm-hmm. power tools. I mean, that's subjective as to what a power tool entails. That could be construction. That could be maintenance of the lawn. I mean, I think that could be subjective.
Right. So the hours Monday through Friday are unaltered. Mm-hmm. They remain the same.
The issue is in the single-family districts yes. that, you know, if you wake up in the morning, not everybody can afford or has someone that they hire to do their landscaping. So if you want to get up in the morning and mow your lawn, you have to wait till 10 o'clock. And I think that was the issue.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if we can maybe look at that. I'm not sure I want to necessarily exempt single-family. We have code here. Do we have a record of how many complaints we've had?
Tom Kivator, Assistant Director of Co-Compliance. We had in 2019 11 complaints for leaf blowers violation noise. Not specific, by residential.
Mm. So 11 in the whole year?
Yeah.
How much was that, Tom, again?
Excuse me?
How many complaints?
11.
11.
And do we know if that was Monday through Friday or was that Saturday and Sunday? We don't have that data.
No. And since 2016, it was 22 complaints. The leaf blower, so
it's kind of, it's really not a problem, except
it's a problem to those that
yes.
complain.
Yes, you know, of course it is. Well, not just that they complain, but it's a problem that probably is hitting other neighbors that aren't.
So
aren't
let's do
writing
this.
About it.
Maybe we exempt single family homes for today and watch it. We can always add that in if we see that's an issue. I think that you need to also give us a breakdown as to those complaints and the areas in which those complaints are, because we obviously have to watch that closer. And if those complaints happen to come from the single family area by second reading, then we'll include it.
I'm comfortable with that. I always have in the mind, let's, you know, do it more incrementally. So what we're doing is in our commercial areas for the weekends and holidays, we're putting gas blowers, power tools, all those devices, the same time as construction. Right. And for now, we will carve out residential areas, and we'll bring that back to commission.
No, carving out single family.
Single family homes, and we'll bring that back to the commission for second reading.
Yeah, I'll adopt that as a motion.
All right, by acclamation. All right. And I'm looking forward to the leaf blower discussion at sustainability. What other
thank you
do we
all
have?
For coming out tonight.
Yes,
and we'll
thank
continue
you.
To do what we can and try to restrict their use. I know how annoying they are, and I have read several of your posts on this.
And so, also, if you find that they are doing work next door outside the scope of the time that's allowed, please contact our code. Maybe you guys can exchange information so that he can investigate that.
Yes,
for
I gave her my card, and I also gave her our number.
I'm confused. Still seven?
For construction work? Alex, what time? She'd like to know for construction work. Is that it? For construction work or for any work? For lands?
They said it's 8 to 8 except for landscape tools that are allowed to start at 7.
And I'd have to specifically look at the ordinance to make sure that I do. So I don't want to say ultimately that it won't be correct without me having the ordinance right before me.
I think 10's too late.
Okay, so can you email us so we can get that information to you and make sure if we need to do any further updates to this, we will.
You have a majority voting for it, but I just want to say that I think 10 a.m. is too late to have the start in the commercial districts. People are up by 9.
And I believe he's got the ordinance before.
I think 7 is definitely too early, but I think 8 or 9 would be better than 10. 10 is late in the morning.
Yeah, I have the ordinance. It's construction between the hours of 7:30 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. at different zones. And then it's on weekends. It's between the hours of 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. on weekdays and 10 to 4 on Saturdays. And then Sundays is nothing. Sunday has to be what we call no noise. It could be if you have to paint or something, like quiet construction.
Okay, so to be clear, this would bring the hours in sync with what we're already doing for other types of construction.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So what we'll do is I gave the lady my card and we'll monitor it at her address and everything.
I think they should be in sync. I think they should be the same.
It's fine. What other items do we have to do? Are we done? Item number 10.
Did we do the barriers? Did we do barriers already? Number 2?
No, we can do that. Item number 2. Discussion regarding the installation of beautiful barriers as a concept for security barriers around the city.
Me again.
Your lucky day.
Good morning. Basically, with beautiful barriers, this was a pilot project that went to committee. And we implemented it back in March. It's been out on Lincoln Road. And the discussion is we put it out there for a few months to see how it would weather and how it would perform. The concept is it did perform well. Unfortunately, the folks at Lincoln Road didn't want it as a permanent feature because they liked the opportunity until we get that Lincoln Road project going to have the ability to wrap it with different types of wrappings to announce certain art installations, et cetera, as you'll see the next few months with the Botero installation. The concept works well, but at this time we're not recommending, and I did speak to Commissioner Hahnemann, who is not present, about this, keeping beautiful barriers as a vendor and potentially using it for specific projects, but at this time we wouldn't recommend it. Because we are phasing out the barriers into more permanent bollards,
it doesn't make
sense to make that kind of investment.
I've seen bollards, I think I mentioned it before, in some cities where they're like made of stainless steel and they're retractable.
Correct.
So that would be something perfect to use on such streets as Ocean Drive, where sometimes it becomes a pedestrian street. The bollards come up, cars can't drive in.
So the Lincoln Road bollards, as this project develops, you'll see that some of them are retractable. While they won't be more electronic, they would be removable.
Right.
Hispaniola has the ones that have the ability to be pushed down if we needed to get in for city services. But you're starting to see us kind of move out of the Jersey barriers into more permanent bollards throughout all these projects funded by the GEO.
Much more attractive.
Right. So at this time, the recommendation is not to move forward with the barriers.
Okay, so we won't move forward at this time, but I will say that I love that concept of these security barriers looking
attractive.
Not like security barriers and actually being part of the environment. And so we'll go forward with your recommendation and remove it at this time, but I want us to keep in mind for where we're not being, where we're not looking to put permanent ballards around the city, we may want to keep this kind of on the back burner so that we always know that this is an option we may want to look into for other areas in the city.
Sure, and I've discussed this with my colleagues in Capital Projects. As we're doing these projects or these roadwork projects that have these barriers for a significant or extended period of time, it does make sense to have some of this on a case-by-case basis. For example, Lincoln Road has the wrappings that are consistent with the piano key look, but those will actually be removed over the next few weeks, and you're going to see some branding, the Botero installation that's actually going to be on Lincoln Road for the next 5.5 months. So
our motion will be to keep it in mind and on a case-by-case.
Perfect.
Okay?
Thank you.
Affirmation. All right. Item number 10, affordable housing waitlist.
Okay. Thank you. I referred this one a while back after we had the big public waitlist that resulted in so many people applying, and really for two reasons. One that I've been emailing with Maria about that we can discuss further, which was I would like to see if there's a method to allow people that are already living or working in Miami Beach to get a preferential placement on the wait list, which as I understand it right now, it's just open to anybody. So if you live and work in Miami Beach, you're competing with anybody else that could be moving from anywhere else that wants to be in this housing. So number one, I wanted to discuss whether there's a way that we can somehow give those people a preferential place. And second, I liked having the memo, and I'd like to hear from administration a little bit, because what happens when these affordable housing wait lists open up, the overwhelming majority of them these days are Hispanic, and they reach out to me. And there's rumors that if you know this person or that person on the fourth floor, that you will get a spot. And if you don't, you won't. And a number of people were reaching out to me very upset that I should be helping them get housing. And I was explaining to them, I don't have any ability to do that as far as I know. So I'd like for you to explain to the people that watch the process a little bit. And secondarily for the committee, I'd like to know if there's a way to kind of prioritize the people that are already here.
Good morning, Maria Ruiz, Director of Housing and Community Services. The waitlist actually is a prescribed process, and it's a very transparent process to ensure that there's equity and fairity, and we apply to all fair housing rules. So the way that the housing application process begins is we first have an opportunity for everyone who is interested to apply. That doesn't mean that they're eligible. It means that they're interested to apply. From there, we do a lottery, which is actually administered through our IT office, and they randomly select 1,000 names. They're put in a randomized order of 1 to 1,000. Then as a unit becomes available, we actually access 10 people at a time, and we send them out correspondence and let them know we have a unit available. Are you interested? If so, please make sure that you submit your documentation so that we may certify you as eligible. The properties that the City of Miami Beach administers, for the most part, are guided under our home rules, which means that they're really meant for working-class families who earn up to 60% AMI, although we can go up to 80% AMI. And the goal really is to get them into this kind of housing and encourage them to earn more money so that they can actually exit out of the housing. The vast majority, hands down, of the people that have applied for our housing list believe that we're Section 8, and they think that their rent is going to be capped at 30% of their income, and that is not the case at all. And in fact, the vast majority of the people that end up having to say no is because in actuality, the rent is not affordable to them at the current income. So once we go through a person who is actually income certified and the unit is available, we then make sure that the income certification is complete, the lease is then executed, and the person then moves in. And that person's name is removed from the list. Anyone who voluntarily either says they no longer are interested or a person who is deemed ineligible because at the time of certification they earn too much money, they are removed from the list. And we tend to do 10 people at a time, sometimes 20 people at a time, because the vast majority of people are turning us down because they can't afford our rent.
So, Maria, if this committee and the commission wanted to, would it be possible then to prioritize future waiting lists for people that are already living or working here?
Absolutely. And to the truth, Commissioner, is that if that is where the greatest need, hands down, is. The vast majority of the people currently on the wait list are over the age of 55. They're not necessarily engaged in our workforce. So there's definitely great need there. I think the other piece to that, and I think we need to get better at that as well, is that when we put the wait list out, we wanted to let people know, hey, the rent isn't Section 8. And what we really need to say is, this is what the rent's going to be. It's not tied to your income, but you have to be income certified. So we need to also improve our marketing to be able to make sure that the message is clear from the very onset. Because people get disappointed when they realize, oh, no es plan ocho. And that's the first word that we hear. And it's heartbreaking because there's so many people, especially our elderly, whose income is less than 25% of AMI. Yeah. And they have to somehow live with even our rents and then plus groceries and other costs. And it becomes absolutely heartbreaking because they're literally choosing between food and medicine on certain right. months because they'll always pay the rent. They'll always prioritize that. So there's no doubt that there is a need. And I think what we need to do is work with the agency that does administer the appropriate programs, which is the Housing Authority, because we need more Section 202 housing, more project-based and housing vouchers, because that's the programs that really serve those people who are at the lower end of the income strata.
What is Section 202?
Section 202 is affordable housing for elderly people over the age of 62. And hands down, that is the majority of the people yeah. that are in the wait list, have been and still are in the new batch.
Thank you.
Yeah. So your recommendation?
I think Rick wants to say something.
Rick Kendall, 969 Bay. I just think it's important to have our seniors live close to their children. So if we could have some kind of priority so that if people have their parent and their parent wants to live in Miami Beach, they'll be able to be closer to them. Their life will be much better if they can get into the housing. So I don't know if we have to do something with Washington or with whatever program, but if we can prioritize those, the people that are living here right now or the parents over a certain age that want to live and need to live in some kind of affordable housing. So it has to include, because that's a connection with our community. You know, for many years we brought people in that had no connection to Miami Beach, and it's important to keep our seniors.
Sure, I appreciate that, and I think that's a good point. I guess I'm happy, you know, for people, but if you're living in another municipality or another county and you're lucky enough to come to Miami Beach and get this housing and you have no connection or no connectivity to our city, I find it unfair to the people that are already here. So my motion would be to find a way in the future to prioritize the list for people that are already living in the city or working in the city or have immediate family in the city.
I don't think I've ever seen the relative aspect. I'll have to research that one. You can prioritize residents, and you can prioritize key workforce. So we'll have to do a little more research on how far the regulations allow us to go.
Okay. Okay. So by acclamation. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you.
Madam Chair. And our final item?
You know, before I wanted to address the whole noise thing just to provide a bit of clarity. So I don't know if you want to do that after you finish that or.
Let's do it now if you want to provide. All right.
So there's.
I'm always about clarity.
Right. So let me identify. There's three things that are in play here. You've got the construction provision of the noise ordinance, and that is conditioned upon there being a valid permit. And what we went ahead and we did in the ordinance as we sit here today is we differentiated between construction activity that occurs within a commercial zoning district, CD2, CD1, CD3. So we identified that there are different time constraints for those periods of time. Now, what we went ahead in that specific section is we allow it from 7:30 a.m. until 6:30 p.m., and then from 7:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. during daylight savings time, and that's Monday through Saturday. There is a prohibition within those zoning districts for any work that occurs during Sundays or national holidays, barring an emergency situation where the city manager has given them authorization to do that work. Now, for those single-family zoning districts, your RM1, RM2, and so forth and so on, the hours for construction is from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. on weekdays, and then from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturdays, Sundays, and national holidays. And then what we have is then you have to go to the section that we were seeking to actually amend, which is that provision of power tools and landscaping equipment. That's your chainsaws, your circular saws, and those type of power equipment when that is happening outside of the actual home. And that is limited from 8 p.m. until 8 a.m., and there is no valid permit component for that provision. So we were amending that section for power tools and landscaping equipment to conform with the more constrictive provision of hours that we have in the residential zoning districts. So that's where the 10 to 4 on Saturday or on Sunday was occurring. If we were to use the other one, it would be broadening the time, which I believe that there was an issue there.
Okay.
I don't know if that provided.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
No, okay. In the future, though, when we have items that are coming to this committee between first and second, the after action is great, but the actual ordinance would be also very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, we'll make sure that we get that attached.
Thank you. All right, our final item, is that correct? We have one last item. What did we save the last for? What's the best item?
That's illegal dumping.
Oh, illegal dumping.
Good morning. Tom Kiritor, Assistant Director, Co-Compliance, and Coordinator of the North End Enhancement Team. Solutions to illegal dumping. We have three solutions. Most of them that we have here, we're in the process of doing. One is cooperation and collective responsibility in reporting illegal dumping. We do that through our eGov app, and we do that through our city code number, the 305-604-CITY, which we find now a lot of people are calling that when they have illegal dumping, so we go there. We know that the victims of the crime. Also, the second component is the enforcement component, which we're identifying locations with our partners in the police, and we're putting up security cameras in certain locations to identify that. And the third is education, awareness, creation, and publicizing success. And we do that. We have a public service announcement, which we now have we have our phone number on, as Commissioner Gregora suggested. Our phone number's on our public service announcements. We're attending HOA meetings, and also we're, we have the NEED team out there also. The only thing, it came up as the reward program. Other cities, Broward County has a Crime Stopper program, which is a not-for-profit, and they have a reward program they give if you catch illegal dumping, if they're convicted. New York City has an illegal dumping program where you get money.
Could you do me a favor? Yeah. That sounds very interesting, actually. Would it be possible to bring kind of what that would look like if we were to do something like that here?
Yeah.
Give us like a policy of sorts.
Yeah, I have policies and literature and stuff, so we could do that.
Yeah, because it wasn't attached, unless I missed it, in the supplemental.
Yeah, it was a public. Yeah.
Okay. No, I know. It was on for discussion. I mean, what is the will of this body?
It sounds like something that's
your microphone.
Yeah,
it sounds like a
reward would be
like a carrot and the stick approach.
Yes,
sounds like a good idea.
I'm okay with that. Do you want to bring back when there's something specific? Like maybe bring it back next month when we have something written that we can review.
Because Broward County, I said it's a not-for-profit that does it. It's a Crime Stoppers program, not through government.
Yeah, give us all like kind of what your experience is, what you know other municipalities or counties are doing, so we can try to have that information at our hands, so we can try to come up with the best policy moving forward for our city.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anybody want to speak on this issue? Yeah. I figured. I know this one.
Yeah, so in my neighborhood, Normandy Isles.
Get your name for the record.
Yeah, Gianpaolo Mosconi, Normandy Isles on North Beach. I walk my dogs three times a day, so I walk all over the place. And it seems to me like a lot of these multifamily complexes or apartment buildings don't educate their residents on this. So somebody moves out, all of a sudden you have a king-size mattress, some dresser or something at the curb. And it takes a while to come pick up. I know the city sends a truck out maybe 2-3 times a week to go pick this stuff up, but we got to start with educating these owners of these buildings to make sure their residents know not to be dumping stuff at the curbside, and that continues to happen.
Yeah, we just spoke at the Normandy Homeless Association, but I'll get your number after here, and we can work on that, and I'll give you our number. And when you see, because we have a NEED team that goes out.
And I report it on the app when I walk. I report it. But it seems like sometimes that app is not real time or doesn't work.
Other number, I'll give you our 305-604-CITY number. It's a live person. You can give us the information. We get out there right away.
Okay. But, I believe that education of those property owners.
Agreed education is a key component.
Is the beginning to the resolving the issue, because the residents, and sometimes those property owners, when the resident leaves, they do the same thing. They just dump it out there and figure the city will pick it up.
100%. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and I misspoke. We have one other item. As I see Adrian Morales sitting there, your favorite Commissioner Gongora, iguanas.
Yes.
I'm not.
Yes.
I'm not a big fan of iguanas.
So we've basically gone out through this, the initial phase or the pilot of the remediation of this iguana issue. That's a larger, I guess, a statewide issue, which is why Florida Fish and Wildlife has issued those regulations. We had a company, Redline Iguana, come out, and they started going through these five facilities or five park facilities, and they've removed about 200 to date. What they've done is they've trapped and snared them, or they snared and trapped them, and then you know, taken off site. We like to expand that program to the other facilities. You know, they've already gotten into the Raycow. Now I believe it's the time to go into the golf courses and some of the waterfront areas.
The golf courses are overrun with iguanas.
So the management
families, big ones.
Yes, and the management company of the golf course has already started doing some of that, but we need to assist them as well. And we'd like to move into to the waterfront areas, you know, on Collins and Indian Creek, et cetera. In addition to that, I'm also working on the procurement or the specifications to do a long-term control program similar to our rodent control program, which will be monthly service, and at some point we'll just put this as part of our current service level.
Humane control.
Correct. We do. They do not euthanize in the city. What they do is they trap, snare, take them off site, and do what they do. Yes, humane.
Thank you.
And as far as for the residents, what we've done is educate them. We've put information on iguana control on our city website, and our communication, our marketing and communications department has also put on Twitter sharing information on that as well. So that education piece is important. As we move into this procurement, we'd also like to leverage those relationships for services to the residents at the rates the city pays or something like that, but we're not there yet. We'd like your authority to kind of move forward with this pilot and then pursue a long-term control program.
I move that we continue this program and expand it to the golf courses and any other areas that
I second the
are overrun.
Item.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
My colleagues have spoken. All right. So this is the final meeting in September. We have one in October. For those who celebrate, happy high holidays, and everybody, we'll see you later at the budget meeting.
Great. Yes,
good night. Good day.
And sustainability.
Sustainability, and sustainability is at what time, Mark? 1 o'clock.
Yes, sustainability is at 1 o'clock.
Meeting adjourned.